Hey everyone, we're back, Bootstrapped Web. Good to be back at it. Jordan, what's up, buddy?
Not much, man. How's everything going?
Going pretty good. I mean, well, other than that whole election thing, but we won't talk about that.
Yeah. So we just had our MicroConf, like Portland meetup here. Yeah. And usually we just dive into business, and it was the day after Election Day. So a bunch of software people are just like, you can't help it. You got to talk about it a little bit.
That was... I'm just not going to get into it. Moving on. You know what? I did like your tweet. I think it was that night or the next day. What was that?
What's funny is that I didn't realize that I did it. It was the election night, and it had become apparent who the winner was going to be. And everyone was melting. And I saw a fantastic tweet about Status Page. You know, statuspage.io, that company. They do like $2.4 million in ARR, and they have one support person. 10,000 customers on 1,600 paid accounts, and they have one support person. And they wrote this article about how they rotate each person in the company gets a full week, that they're 100% responsible for the support. And so I retweeted that and was like, this is great. And I got the response back like, yeah, dude, focus on the right things. Forget the election. Keep moving forward. Hold on, I'm just going to kill my dog real quick.
Yeah, but you had a follow-up tweet right after that link that you shared, something like, we got to stay focused. You know, he won't help us. He won't hurt us.
Right. The person in the White House is not going to really have an impact on our lives one way or another. It's like, no one's going to do it but us. And just keep going.
That's it. And, you know, I mean, for me personally, I haven't talked much about it publicly, but, you know, I've probably, like many other people, I've been basically hooked to reading the news every day, watching some you know, BS news on television, and just being in this crap that we've been seeing for the last 2 years here in the US. And I think it's just time to go on the news, or at least try to go on a news fast, and just break out of that and just focus on the things that actually matter that we can control, which is, you know, family, friends, and working on the business.
Right. And yes, there are macro elements, tax rates, the general business environment. But at the end of the day, your success or failure is dependent on you.
Exactly. And we all have, you know, better things to focus on right now, right in front of us in the business that we're working on. And that's really what matters. Definitely matters right now here today, working on this podcast. So
that's right. Good segue into, and this will be an update episode, see what's going on, what lessons we've learned over the past few weeks. I've got a few things I'd like to talk about.
Yep.
I'm sure you do too. You sure. Let me know you if you want to get going. You want me to start?
Sure do. Yeah. No. Yeah. You go ahead.
Okay. So I think the first interesting update will be over the past few weeks we have spoken about software versus services. Can they coexist? Should you do both? And I've basically been flirting with the custom work services side. And we talked about it's better if it goes along with the product you're building, all this other stuff. So basically my update is this week I closed the first service deal, the first custom work. It's a custom funnel with custom design and strategy built on top of our funnel product. And it's in the 10K range. And so obviously, money is good for the company, but the more interesting part is like, A, that it's out there, that the market, there are people out there that are looking at our product and say, yes, I will pay $10,000 to have that in my business. So that's like an indicator. And what we've talked about internally in the company is it worth our time? You know, we can't do something for $1,000 if it takes our focus off. So what we've kind of come to the conclusion of was, okay, Jordan, if you say we might be able to have an opportunity in services, go close two deals of substantial revenue, and that will be our indicator like that, yes, there is an opportunity.
Right.
So now we have our first piece.
Right, so I have two questions on that.
Sure.
All right. So one is how did the sale come about? And then two will be like, what's the plan for fulfillment? So, I mean, like just on the first one, I assume this came out of a lead for the product first, yes. Right?
Yes. Just the website. Someone coming in and seeing the product and then getting in touch.
So they just reached out to you asking questions about, like, did they bring up the idea of custom work, or how do they know that that's even on the table, or how did that come up?
So what I have found, not surprisingly, is that people with budgets reach out to talk instead of just signing up and never talking. So they reached out, and I looked at their site and I said, uh-oh, these guys run like multiple brands, very impressive stuff. So I said, I want to get these people on the phone. So I talked with the guy there and we hit it off. And it's just like business owner to business owner. We just like saw eye to eye, got on really well. And then when you start talking about what they're trying to accomplish, it was very, very clear from the beginning that this is not a normal, you know, just set up and get a little help onboarding. It's no, the design is super important. It's complicated. It is an integration with the Shopify store with a recurring billing application. It was just very apparent right away that it was custom. So I tried to set the expectations of, this is awesome. We want to work with you. It's really important for the company to work with people of your caliber, but this is more than just the software. This is a custom project.
Got it. So the initial outreach from him was, I want to talk to you about this product. Will the product as it exists today, will that work for us? And getting on the phone allowed you to turn the conversation to, okay, we can do it, but it would require some custom work. Let's have that discussion. And from how did it go from that conversation to closing the deal?
Building up a relationship over email, trying to figure out how to accomplish their goals. So, right, we are also working with another company that does the recurring billing app. And so we need an integration with them and our product and Shopify, right? So we like brought other people in, and it was basically just working over email with people CC'd, trying to figure out how to accomplish what they're trying to accomplish. And that really allowed us to basically show what we were capable of, how we communicate. And then from there, we became kind of professional buddies. And then when it got to the point of, okay, is this possible? Tell me how much it's going to cost. And then we talked, and it made sense. And I helped him understand. I was very honest. I said, look, we haven't done custom work like this before. We're rocking on the product. We're pumping out features. We're trying to plan webinars. If we're going to take our focus off, I have to make sure that my team is protected and justified in doing that. And he was like, totally cool. I fully understand. Now,
you know, what I think is a good sign for you on this is that this deal came about like without you even planting a public flag, like, hey, everybody, custom work is available. Come talk about it or buy it here. You know, the demand kind of just bubbled up naturally, and it was like an inbound request. So that's another, you know, definitely a good sign, I think.
Right. And so I thought the same thing. I said, now what would it take to set up a sales process that ensures that that's injected in as an option? So, you know, the first thing you can do is literally in my drip campaign that goes out to someone after they sign up, I can just have another email go out, right? Like I have a little planned onboarding where it's like welcome email day one. Day two is, have you seen how it works video? And then how to build your first funnel, how to add upsells. And then one of those days should be, did you know that we're available for custom design and strategy work? Get click here. So that one thing would just be super simple, literally just adding an email to a drip campaign. And then that would ensure that everyone that signs up would see that we're available for that. The truth is, a little later on in this episode, I want to talk about some pricing changes and the not just the pricing, but the process around signing up is changing to make sure that I get into conversations with people.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is that like back end thing you can do on the drip campaign. You could also put, you know, some information up on the website or like a page, even like in the corner of the footer, just it's there so that somebody can see that it's there. But I think that may be getting ahead of yourself. Like right now you're still just seeing like, is the demand there? Is this something that we could actually work in? But that brings up the second question of like,
yes,
how are you going to fulfill this and how much of a distraction will it be?
Right. And that's why it is still an experiment. It cannot be called a successful experiment yet. One part of two has been a success, meaning we can attract and close. Now, fulfillment will teach us, do we like doing this? Do we hate it? Do we want to continue to do it or never do it again? Is this like a new business? Would we want to build out a team specifically for this? Or this is so distracting that it's going to kill the other side. So it's really, it's going to be a learning experience and all of us are looking at it that way.
So how about for this first project? Like who needs to work on it?
So today, this morning, on Fridays, we do an hour and a half stand-up. It's not a stand-up if it's 90 minutes. It's basically a planning meeting for the next week. So this morning, I just got off the phone with the guys to plan for what's happening in next week's sprint. And so what we've tried to do is basically make sure that the needs of the service are aligned with the needs of the product. So we need to do some custom templating for them. So next week we're working on our editor. So we should work on the editor first. And then once the editor is released, then work on the templates. So now I can go back and tell the client, okay, here's the expected timing on the templates being done, because it's like, okay, the product needs progress on the editor. Once that's done, so we're trying to like marry the two of them, right? We're not at a point that the product is built out to the point where it's just adding new stuff for custom work. It actually is going to interfere with the product development. So we have to like tiptoe around the needs of the product also. It's gonna be tricky. The good thing is I think the monetary value of the deal is high enough to help us with the justification. We're not just gonna be rolling our eyes like, geez, how much time am I freaking spending on this thing for $2,000? At least it's high enough to give us some cover.
Yeah, I mean, like if you were to go down this path and really build it into a channel, I think early on, the first couple of projects, it'll be more of a distraction. If the scale is like, you know, revenue and on one side and like distraction and delays on the other side, early on, it'll be more of a distraction and delay, regardless of the revenue, because you have to pull people off. And that means bugs and features come later, mm-hmm. rather than sooner on the product. Right. But if the revenue's there and the leads are there and you can, you know, build it into a pretty consistent channel, then you can hire someone to cover that, the service side of it. I mean, that'll still take up plenty of mind share and focus, especially on your end. And you've got I do it right now too. Like we're building out a product and we have a sales arm of the service to manage. And it's frustrating for me to go back and forth between the two and think about making improvements here while I'm working on the other thing there. And it's tough.
You feel yourself the bottleneck where you really just want individual people in place to handle each thing. And it's just not yet. You can't afford to just hire everyone that you need just yet.
Yeah. But, I do want to just point out something that I've just been thinking about a lot in the last couple of weeks, that there's not enough discussion generally about how to make a young bootstrapped, but I would include like angel funded companies, how to make them financially viable and sustainable for the first year, 2 years. I mean,
it's nuts.
You do have to think about things like this. The way my strategy right now has been, launch it and fund it with a productized service and reinvest the profits into building out the product line. And that means having multiple products and multiple focuses and a large team of contractors and employees. And I mean, that's financially it's working, but it also adds a lot of stress and lack of focus,
and the speed.
And slow, it has to go slowly. But you know what? These are choices that I made, and I actually prefer it this way. And I think there needs to be more of a reality-based discussion. Like basically a bootstrapped software startup cannot make the same decisions that a funded startup would. And you have to set different priorities.
Yeah. It's tough. We've talked about this before. It's this strange gap where you need more people and more work, more capacity effectively to get your revenue up, but you need money to pay those people and to create that capacity that you don't have yet. And yeah, you get into this point where, okay, this thing works. People are paying for it. They're getting value. They're not leaving. So it works. Now let's do more. But there's like this big gap, especially because if you're signing people up for $100 a month, it takes a long time to catch up to the amount of money you need. So yeah, so you know, we've talked about different types of solutions, like charging for annual and getting that upfront, using a product X service. I've read, you know, of other situations where people got started with one big client or two that they did work for, and you know, one client pays them $50,000, and that basically keeps them afloat for like 4 months.
Well, that's exactly how I started with Restaurant Engine. Mm-hmm. I was doing client work for years, and then at the very tail end of that, as I was phasing that down, I kept on one or two clients for like six final months of consulting work, and those were like my two best, easiest to work with clients, mm-hmm. high budget, you know, and you know, it took a bit of time, but it was not a huge distraction. I was able to split my time with that and keep working on Restaurant Engine.
Yeah, yeah, that's actually how I started Carthook too. At the very beginning, I was working with my dad's biz, and the nature of that business is you do a bunch of work, you get paid like a year later on a lot of that work. Mm-hmm. So I just had like, 9 months of income because the work I did previously.
Right. Right.
So you need something to fill that gap, whether it's a product I service, a good client, pre-sales, annual sales, something. It's very tricky.
So, So I'm in on that note of planning the sustainability of funding a new venture within a business, as everyone I've been talking about. Right now, we are heavily invested in building a SaaS product right now. And my next update later in this episode, I'll talk about progress on that. But for right now, I want to kind of, I guess, announce in a way. I know I've talked about in the past the possibility of doing a training product from Audience Ops. I had tabled that for a number of months this year when we decided to go down the software route. Just recently, I decided that we will, after all, we have started building the Audience Ops training program, which will be a paid product. And we'll be launching that in probably around January or February next year. It'll kind of be a companion product that comes with the software. You can just do the training, or you can just buy the software, but the recommended way is to buy them both. The training will come with a trial of the software. Now, you know, I'm sure there are listeners thinking about like, why are you taking on like another product right at the same time of building the software? So let me try to explain this, and it goes right along with what we were just talking about.
Yeah, let's like hear the logic, justification, you know, why?
There's a few reasons, but just first the financial. I started mapping out the marketing plan for the SaaS in 2017, because our whole marketing funnel will definitely need to change, you know, when we shift the focus from selling a service over to selling a SaaS. I mean, obviously we need way more leads and free trials, and then converting those to paying customers of a $99 a month SaaS versus, you know, getting a couple of leads every month and landing those for the service. It's just a very different marketing game. So I spent a lot of time last week mapping out a very detailed marketing funnel, you know, that involves, you know, like automated webinars, paid advertisements, content, you know, doing different things and taking customers through different stages. And I started to think about, okay, the financial aspect of this, I'm already investing many thousands of dollars into development on this product right now. We've mm-hmm. already spent a couple thousand dollars. I am scheduled to spend several thousand dollars more over the next 4 months. And, you know, we've got a bit of profit margin on the service to support that. But looking ahead, if the goal is to, and I've basically set the goal of getting 100 paying customers on the SaaS before the end of 2017. So I'm starting to think about the year-long goals for 2017. In order to do that, I'm going to need to invest pretty heavily in marketing, like much more than we are right now. And in order to make that viable, along with the cost of paying developers, you know, we can't be strapped. So having the training product, you know, selling for somewhere around $500, a one-time purchase, if we can sell, you know, 5 to 10 of those a month and make that the front-end offering, that basically pays for the marketing spend, which then those leads get transferred into the software. So that's That's benefit number one. Benefit number two would be we're training our methodology and our recommended strategies, and we're giving away our systems and our processes and for how to run a content marketing team for your business. That goes hand in hand with our software. Like, it trains you on how to use our software and that sort of thing. Again, you don't need the training for the software. You don't necessarily need our software for the training, but they go hand in hand, which I think will have the effect of getting people to buy into the idea of using the software. You know, that could reduce churn, help with onboarding and that sort of thing. You know, and then off of the back of the training and the service and the software, you know, more leads will flow into the service as well, and we'll keep that going as well. So, you know, yeah, it's like multi-focused, different products all kind of coming together and being built at the same time. It's pretty hectic. The benefit right now, I mean, Audience Ops is almost 2 years old, so we have a very strong team. Like, even for this training product, I mean, I'm working on the outline for it, but one of our lead writers is basically writing most of the content for it. And a couple of people on my team will be involved in, along with myself, will be recording some of the video training and whatnot. So, you know, it's more of a team effort. I've got a really great developer working on the software. It's not like I'm the one coding every day. So, you know, I'm kind of managing my time accordingly. I'm not pulling all nighters. I'm not working throughout the weekends. You know, I've got a family and kids. I'm just working basically a 40-hour week, more or less. And I'm managing the time accordingly. You know, but it's, I mean, I'm not going to say it's easy by any means. It's stressful. It's, and especially thinking
anything but easy,
especially thinking about how much of a big change is going to happen with Audience Ops as we head into 2017. It's that saying, you know, what got us here won't get us there. Like, we've hit a point now where the service just, I've decided, like, I don't want to just double down on the service and keep growing that. We need to shift into a more, you know, diversified product line with software and training.
Yeah, I think it's going to strengthen the service part also and allow you to charge more for it. It sounds to me like you're building out the three strong foundations for a real value ladder. You know, the software as the lower end offering that anyone can benefit from, one step up in the training for people who buy into your philosophy, that can also be an entryway going both ways down to the software and up to the service. And then for people who have budget and want you to take care of it along with the way you teach it, then you've got the higher end on the service. So I love it. And facing reality now on the cash constraints that will be created by the software is just a mature, responsible way to look at it. Because even if the software is successful, it's just not going to bring in significant money for months and months and months.
Yeah. And we're not talking about a $5 a month SaaS. I mean, the average plan will be like $99 a month, and we'll have some agency plans starting at $300 a month. Even with a relatively, you know, a higher price, not higher for B2B, but you know what I'm saying? It's not like
it's
a painfully
higher than most people assume.
Right. It's not a painfully low SaaS price, but even at that level, it's, you know, you need hundreds of customers before it's a significant channel for the business. And to get to that point, and I want to get to that point fast. I'm not going to spend 4 years getting to that point. So
yeah, this is like the biggest mistake you hear bootstrappers early on make is getting the pricing wrong and then assuming that customer acquisition is easier than it really is. If you price something at $50 a month, to get 50 paying customers on a new SaaS is really hard.
Yes, it is.
It's really, really hard. To get to 100 people, man, to get the first 10 people is hard. So even if your average revenue per user is $100, to get 50 people, realistically speaking, if you do it within 90 days, you did awesome. And that's only 5K.
That's insanely awesome.
Right. You did awesome. You got 50 paying customers on a brand new SaaS within 90 days.
You did
great.
I know that there are many people listening to this and who listen to lots of these podcasts and go to the micro comps and everything and think about who have never done a SaaS before. I had the same misconception myself, like before I did Restaurant Engine, like a SaaS, you start thinking about thousands of customers paying X dollars a month. But that vision, it does not come true. It's so far off in the future. There's such a huge gap between day one and getting to 1,000, let alone 100.
1,000 customers, too. We've been at it for a while. We're not close to 1,000. And not that there aren't exceptions, not that you should plan on everything going slowly, but look, we've been doing this for a while. We know a lot of people doing it. The truth is that the average is slow because it's not top down. It's not, oh, there are 250,000 Shopify stores. I can definitely get 500 of them. It's not like that. It's bottom up. It's talking each individual person on intercom. They ask you questions. You get them on the phone. You show them the demo. They sign up. They go through a trial. Hopefully they sign up, and that's one. If you can do 3 or 4 of those a week, you're the man. And that's like 10 paying customers a month.
And then you have to assume that there are going to be changes. There are going to be setbacks. You know, at 20 customers, you're going to start to find, okay, a lot of them are not sticking around because they have this common objection. Okay, now we have to change the product, you know, and getting them to switch from our competitor is not as easy as we thought it would. So you have to just plan for, like, these things are going to come up. And so that's kind of my thinking there. So anyway, on the update, like, we have begun working on the training product. It'll be basically a big playbook plus a couple of videos, plus our SOPs, our systems, templates and everything for running this stuff. And
I love it, man. I love it.
I pulled in two of my teammates on it. We're working on it together. And I think I set up like a project for basically like a 3-month production schedule for that. Hopefully it'll get out there in January. And then kind of to go along with that, right now I'm working on setting up a webinar, which will be an automated webinar series. And I'm getting that going. So
yeah, I think you can make more money on the training product than anything else just because of the efficiency. But then you can use it everywhere. It's an asset, right? You use it everywhere. When someone signs up for the software, if you pay $100 a month, you get it. But what if you pay $1,000 for the year, you also get the training for free? Like, it's just this thing you can use.
The other angle is, you know, you buy the training, you can, if you decide to go for the done for you service, you can credit that towards your first month.
It's beautiful. You know, yeah. It works together. Awesome, man. I'm very, very excited. And I kind of like this time of year, like middle of November. You kind of start, you give up on unrealistic expectations and you're like, okay, so my target is basically January. And what can I do? What can I get done over the next few weeks?
Yeah. I agree. I love getting a jump on those annual goals. As much as the annual goals never really stick, you know. But yeah, right now we're definitely getting in that time of year where you start to think through what are the big goals and big changes and what's the reality? What do we actually need to do in order to make that happen? And I think that planning goals like this, you should take a lot of time. Like, now is a good time to start planning 2017 goals. Take all of November and December to just step back and think and then really take action next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we're not giving up on like the short-term stuff. But it's nice to start thinking in terms of, you know, the next few weeks and what's coming up. Cool, man. All right. So one quick thing and then one bigger thing. I had the opportunity to go to a mastermind a few days ago, earlier in the week. There's a good buddy of mine named Tanner Larson. He's a great e-commerce guy. He really knows his stuff. He's got a pretty good following. He's got his own e-commerce businesses. He's got a training program. He also has like a higher end mastermind, and he invited me down to speak to them and show them the product. First time in Reno, Nevada. Pretty cool, beautiful place. So it was a very interesting experience. I went down there. It was basically like rubbing up against my target market for 2 days, and like just sitting in a room with 20 of them and just talking. It was. I got to watch someone sign up for the product and onboard right next to me on a couch. And I just like biting my knuckles, like not to say, just, it's right there. If you just click. Yeah. It was an awesome experience. As she's doing, I was just writing in Trello, bug.
That's awesome.
The coolest part was, well, two things. The unexpected part the biggest takeaway was not what I need to do and how do I need to convince these people, what's the positioning. The biggest takeaway was, who do I not want to target? Because we when we were there, we talked about basically these different approaches, right? There's like the retailer approach and there's the marketer approach. And it helped me kind of see, like, if I want to sell, if I want to do like the affiliate thing, that's just a different way to go with the business. And one of the guys there, this guy Will, was very helpful in helping me like see, like, we're going to have to choose. Are you going to go like the professional route and like sell to retailers and work with that kind of thing? Or are you going to go the other route and basically sell drugs to drug addicts? Like, this is the new big thing.
When you say this affiliates, what do you mean by that? Like affiliates would use your checkout product to sell products that they're affiliates for? Or?
No, affiliates would promote the checkout.
Just affiliates of Cardhook.
To their list. Okay. Yes. And what the guy helped me understand was, because he came from the affiliate world, he's like, those lists are full of people who are drug addicts. They look for the next high and they throw $1,000 hoping that that's the next thing that's going to get them rich. And I did the presentation in front of them and he's like, what you just showed me, that will sell. It will sell because it is unique enough and it's interesting and it's sexy. And so if you want to go make $250,000 over the next 90 days, you can do it easy. Let's do it. However, you have to understand that that's the direction you're going to take your business. And your users are going to be full of people who kind of are unlikely to actually be successful with your product, but you will make money. And it kind of helped me look at that and say, yeah, I want money. But if I'm honest with myself, that's kind of not the direction that we want to go. We want to go with the professional route, with retailers, make them successful, make them stick around for a few years. And
yeah,
you know, so it was that I mean, was like,
it sounds like short-term gain, but a huge churn headache right off the back end of it.
Right. So it was, that was the biggest takeaway. And the other part that was gratifying was during my presentation of the app, I did like a live demo. There was one person in the audience that was just beside themselves. Her hands were just covered, her mouth in disbelief over the product, because, you know, and obviously that feels cool. But afterward, I went up to her and was like, I love you for all that support. Tell me what's going on. Why did you react that way? It was basically because she was the perfect target market. She was currently experiencing the exact pain that we're solving. And then I was like, okay, you and I are going to go get lunch together and just tell me everything that you're doing. Because you, if I can evoke that reaction in you, that means I need to ignore everybody else and find people like you and show them what this thing is, because then they're going to be like, oh my God, finally, thank you.
What was unique about her?
She was the perfect target. She was using ClickFunnels to accomplish one-click upsells, and she was using Shopify for order management, and they don't talk to each other, and she didn't know what to do with herself. How do I sell my Shopify products through a funnel? I know this is the strategy I want to use with a funnel, but then I'm stuck. I can't sell things with variants. I can't sell things with different sizes. I can't use Shopify's backend to do all my email marketing and my fulfillment. She was just stuck in between the two. And we came up right in the middle and said, how about a bridge between them? And she was like, oh my God, that's it. That's what I need.
Awesome.
Yep. So that was cool.
Good stuff.
That was my mini update, but I think that was a lot. So why don't you go?
Okay. I'll just give a development update. I know a couple episodes ago we had Rob on talking about managing developers and whatnot. I gave a bit of an update then. I think what I said was, at that point, my developer had been working for about 4 weeks on the product so far, and it had been going pretty slow, slower than I would have liked to see that early on. And I acknowledged that the first couple of weeks, it's really more about building the architecture and doing some pretty important baseline planning. And I know that stuff just by its nature has to go slow. But after like week 3 and 4, I was like, all right, we got to get kind of moving on this thing. And so what happened, you know, right after that conversation on the podcast, or I don't know, that day or something, I basically, sent a long email to my developer on this and just kind of laid out like, look, I'm not trying to be an asshole or anything, but you know, I just have to voice the concern that, you know, we're not moving at the pace that I would have expected to move here. And I'm definitely understanding of the technical challenges, especially the initial requirements that we have. We're doing some pretty unique stuff with navigating a calendar and whatnot. You know, I'm not completely new to software development and working on the web and doing web projects. So I do know the technical ins and outs of things that maybe he wasn't aware that I do know this kind of stuff. And so I think one of the challenges was, you know, I would write some pretty detailed requirements for some of the features. And this is my fault for having the wrong assumption, but I thought that if something was technically challenging and really, really tricky, more so than I would have thought, that he would have voiced that early on and try to question me on something, or at least point it out to me and say, this is really challenging. But instead, what happened was he went into a hole for 3 days and researched and prototyped all these different workarounds for it. And just burned 2 or 3 days at a time, you know? So,
yeah, that's so hard to deal with.
Yeah. You know,
it's so, assumptions. It's like dealing with assumptions.
Yeah. And it's like, and two or three of those things have happened. And I've made it pretty clear that, like, look, if you run up against the wall, you have to tell me, and I'm willing to change the requirement or change the design to achieve this, like the same end result, but in an easier way, you know?
It's a difficult thing to do. I use the word ideal all the time when talking about development. I say, what I just wrote out, that is the ideal. Don't go spending a week achieving the ideal. If the ideal is not reasonable, let's figure out an alternative to the ideal, and we'll move one step further from ideal and then another step until we get to a realistic point. But don't go into a hole for 3 days figuring out how to accomplish the ideal when it's not the most important thing in the entire business.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, to be honest, today, you know, we're like 2 weeks later. On the bright side, we have been moving much, much faster. And I think that just me voicing the concern was definitely a big wake up call. And I don't want that to sound like I was being a dick about it or anything, but like, I think he was pretty clear that okay, this I'm sounding the alarm bells and things need to change. And I saw a visible improvement over the last 2 weeks. We're shipping features that, you know, we're moving right along now. I think it's pretty good. There are still some things, like, you know, like yesterday there was a feature that I just wrote a simple thing in one of the requirements that I did not realize through such a wrench, and we kind of lost half a day yesterday. And I was like, whoa, we'll change it. It doesn't have to be a pop-up. It could work this way, and like, whatever.
You right.
Know? But,
I read a Google Docs. Google Docs has become my most often used app, which I didn't expect. But whenever we're talking about a new feature or something, and I say, do you want me to write a Google Doc on that? And they say yes. And I just write out all my thinking. Screenshots from other apps, why this is important, what this accomplishes for the user, what I'm thinking about this detail. I just throw it all out in a Google Doc. And then before they start, we talk about it. And they're like, did you mean that? Is that what you meant? Because that means this. And so it's like anything to avoid going into the hole, like better to talk about it for half an hour and then do it the right way. It's like what you're doing with your developers, you're turning it into a collaboration as opposed to I'm the boss and I'll tell you what to write.
Right.
And then you go build it.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I've been wanting it to be that way. Of course, like I also just met him, you know, it's like we don't have a history working together. So there's kind of feeling out the different working styles and personalities and everything. And I mean, overall it's been good. And he's been a really cool and dedicated and very smart, very talented developer. I could definitely see that. So it's been pretty cool, kind of a learning experience still in the early days here. But I mean, overall development is moving along. Like, so yesterday I had the second monthly group call with our beta customers. Again, we have that group of 14. I got them all in a group hangout. I also have them in a Slack channel, and I've been giving them, you know, screenshots. And yesterday over the screen share, I kind of walked through, I showed them the functioning app that we have working now. Like, here's what we've built so far. Here's what we haven't built. It's still coming along, but they could see noticeable progress from like last month to this month. So I'm getting, you know, their feedback on that. I also told them yesterday that they'll also get access to that training product that we're working on, which was like kind of a bonus that they weren't expecting because we just decided to do it. That's it on this side.
Nice, man. Very nice. All right. So we've only got a few minutes. I think what I'll close with is pricing. Always a topic for us. I'll give a little shout out to Ruben, who we're going to have on the show next week. You know, he's here in Portland, so he was at that lunch that I'm talking about Wednesday. At some point, I asked him, you know, we were talking about pricing. We had a little disagreement over it on Twitter, so we settled it out in person. I asked him, I said, Ruben, when you want to change pricing, like, do you go to your team? Like, you ask them what they think, and you know, do you get feedback? Like, how do you run that? And he's like, oh, absolutely not. Because if I'm in charge of the marketing, then I'm going to do whatever the hell I want in the marketing. The same way, if they're in charge of development, not that they can do whatever the hell they want, but I'm not going to go tell them that you need to use this thing versus the other thing. Because if they think it's best to use that thing, then that's their call. Which kind of, you know, I try to act that way anyway, but I might sound like a tough guy sometimes on the podcast. In reality, I try to be as collaborative as possible with the team. I don't want to just do whatever the hell I want and without getting their input on it. So sometimes I frame it as, this is what I'm doing, give me feedback. Sometimes I'm like, this is what I'm thinking about, what do you guys think? But it helped me realize that pricing is one of those things that should not be decided by committee. I have the best feel for it because I talk to the most customers and I'm most involved on that side of things. So that was interesting. That kind of helped me free up. And this week we changed our pricing pretty significantly. Right now, if you go to our site, you won't see pricing at all. It just says schedule a demo. But that was basically like a Band-Aid. Like, let's just take pricing off and just put that up until we get the new pricing grid up. But what we're trying to do is we're basically trying to reduce the amount of quantity. We were just getting a bunch of signups and then people weren't really launching and they weren't successful and so they were canceling. And I wanted the quality of the users to go up. So we changed from $97 a month to a flat $300 a month as our first tier. And now we opened up a second tier. And along with the whole services opportunity, that second tier, the first tier is priced $300 a month or $2,400 for the year, because that's 33% off. And it shows the features and a free trial. And allows you to start. And then the second tier is like a custom tier. And there I use that opportunity to basically message that we're available for services. So I wrote like custom design strategy that I just message things that are clearly custom. And then there's no price attached to that. And it says start with a demo. So that's like basically use the software or get a project done.
Right. Yeah, I think that makes sense. Have you launched it? Have you had any feedback on that yet?
No, since we changed to just a demo, obviously the number of signups have been reduced, but now we're getting more demo requests. Mm-hmm. But they
have no idea what the pricing is. Although there's the kind of the assumption that like it must be high.
And people are asking me on intercom. They're saying, hey, I don't see pricing. Can you let me know? And I've had multiple conversations that say, really, $300? Why so expensive? And then I tell myself, that's good. Because some people are going to see it as expensive. And that's not – if every single person says, whoa, way too expensive, maybe that's a problem. But right now we're getting a little bit of both. Like, okay, $300, you know what? Let's do the demo and see what it's all about. And then some people are like, whoa, why so high? I'm like, okay, so now I've gone up past a certain amount of people on like the XY intersect.
Cool. I mean, I think that makes sense. You know, I think it's a good move at the very least just for a test, you know, and it's so early on that like you have to test it.
Yeah. You know? Right. I have no idea if it should be 500, if it should be 300, if it should be 100. I just don't know yet. Ruben was telling me about Sean Ellis and his experience with Qualaroo. After he acquired it, that at some point he just went and just woke up one morning and was like, I think we're going to try something else. Like did very, very decisive experiments. Like, okay, we've been at $29 a month for a month and I'm going to change it. And now it's just going to be $500 a month flat.
Are you guys technically able to just test different prices? Like, is that a headache to change things on the technical side?
It is a headache, but I can't care that it's a headache.
Right.
Right. It's like whatever we need to deal with and change the Stripe plan and the marketing site and the sign up flow.
But at this point, like, can't you just kind of do things manually and like build, like, early on, like while you're testing prices, just show whatever prices on the front end of the marketing site, have them sign up, and then when it's time for them to upgrade, you kind of just manually subscribe them to the plan in Stripe?
No, because we require a credit card up front. And so they need to know what plan they're signing up for up front. Now, the truth is we're still doing some things manually.
But I'm sure there are technical things I'm not aware of, but can't you just still show them a price on the front end of the website? Have them put in their credit card, they're in your Stripe system, and then you just manually update their plan.
Yes, definitely. We're trying to avoid that, but it is inevitable. Like some people who saw the pricing when it was 97 are reaching out and said, hey, can I still get that old pricing? And I'm saying, yes, I'll honor the pricing we talked 3 weeks ago. And so they're signing up for the higher plan, and then I'm just going in and changing it back to 97. Yep. So we'll see. I'll let you know how that experiment goes and see if we keep it or change it or who knows.
Very cool.
Well, all right, homie. It's Friday.
Yeah, good update.
Good weekend over there.
Yeah, you too.
All right. Cheers, man.
See you guys.